Hello and welcome to the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show. Today is a Deep Dives episode. I am your host for the Deep Dives episode, Nick Agar Johnson, here as always with my co-host Paige Otto. Paige, how are you doing this fine evening?
I'm doing great. It's a great Tuesday to talk hoops with you, Nick. And it's our first episode of December. So excited.
Yeah, first episode of December. We've gone a month and a half without them kicking us off the feed. So that's always a plus. For those of you who were confused as to why there was not an episode last week, Paige was incredibly ill and she's still fighting through illness, but doing better enough that she's willing to put up with me for 45 minutes. So for the love of the game. So we are good to go for today. And as usual, we will be covering two players in some depth before a few quick hits at the end, you know, talking around some of the games going on tonight, Tuesday, December 2nd. So there'll be previews of some of the games that you guys will know the results of by tomorrow morning. But let's start off, as always, with the first of our players right after this. All right, so player number one for our discussion today is Nate Biddle of Oregon. And I'm just going to say up front that player number two for today is the player that you chose in Miles Byrd of San Diego State. And there is a benefit to the fact, you know, that Paige was sick last week. As unfortunate as it was for her, it meant that we actually got to see our two players go head-to-head in last Tuesday's game between Oregon and San Diego State. And Paige knows, and the audience does not yet know, that because we were delayed a week, I did something absolutely insane, which is, given that the sample size is still relatively small, but manageable enough that this is possible, I watched every single possession that Nate Biddle has played this season on both the offensive and the defensive end. I also watched some of Oregon San Diego State. I did not watch the whole game, as was my original plan, because my original plan was somehow even more insane than what I just said. But yes, it is true. I have, in fact, watched every single play that Nate Biddle has made this season. I also, of course, read Maxwell Baumbach's excellent article on Nate Biddle that came out about a week and a half ago at this point on the kind of player he's always been and the kind of player that, you know, he's showcasing a little bit more of this season, but a lot of the foundation for what he's put together was already there. So I do want to get your thoughts on Nate Biddle, but just a few things up top to sort of set the scene here for, you know, the kind of player we're dealing with. Biddle is a legitimate 7-footer, according to Maxwell's article, which I'm trusting more than any other source in the world. I trust Maxwell more than pretty much anything. And the source that he cited was, I believe, the G League Elite Camp. I have the article up, but I'm trying to read 17 different things at once. Either way, the point being, Nate Biddle is legitimately 7 feet tall, and he has good shot blocking instincts. And he is both a solid and a willing 3-point shooter. And his last game, you know, sends these numbers down a little bit because he's had a couple of rougher performances recently, but essentially on the season, he's got 48, 35, 81 shooting splits, averaging 16 points, just under 8 rebounds, 2.3 blocks a game, an assist and a half per game, and half a steal as well against just 1.3 personal fouls. And again, I do want to throw to you in just a second to get your thoughts because I'm very curious. But for me, where it stands with Nate Biddle is he's someone who Maxwell has talked about for quite a while. And last season, I started to get on board a little bit, but there were a few more things that I was hoping to see from him. And the early results this year have been absolutely what I wanted to see. And the biggest one by far is he's nearly cut his foul rate in half. And that is huge for a number of reasons, but the biggest of which is his athleticism. And I'm saying athleticism in the sense of, look, he's not the most athletic 7-foot-1 guy you're ever going to find, but there are a few specific things about the way he plays the game that I think are indicative for good and for bad of the kind of player that hopefully he can be at the NBA level. So just thinking about athleticism in three broad categories for the sake of the comparison I'm going to make, and I'm calling them vertical, horizontal, and lateral. Vertical being, you know, obvious. Hey, what's your verticality like at the rim? How high can you jump? How tall are you? How long are your arms? Horizontal being, how well do you get the 94 feet up and down the court? And lateral being, how well do you slide your feet side to side to cover the 50 feet of the width of the court? Nate Biddle is good enough vertically just because he's super tall and he knows where to be and he's cut down on the fouling a lot. Vertical, I'm not worried about at all. Lateral, I think he's better than people expect. He moves his feet pretty well in a slide. He has good anticipation with his hips in terms of cutting off driving angles. You know, he's not fantastic, but I don't think that's really a hindrance for him. Horizontal is a problem. The dude looks bad running up and down the court. It's, you know, I can't put it any simpler than that. And sometimes that's a real problem. And sometimes it's Miles Turner. And it turns out that that doesn't matter anywhere near as much as people think it does. I'm in the court of, I think it's a problem, but I think the combination of his size, his instincts, and the way that he moves the width of the court, not the length of the court, will be fine defensively. Offensively, he's not going to do anything in transition other than hit trail threes because he's slow and he moves weird. And again, this is influenced by the fact that I watched every possession of him this season. I don't know if he's like, I don't remember him having this pronounced of a limp last season. I don't know if there's some injury that he's fighting through that we don't know about, but horizontally moving the 94 feet is a problem. I think that his shooting and his shot blocking can make up for it, but I do acknowledge that that is the biggest problem that I have with his game. Now that I've gone on my Nate Biddle rant, Paige, what are your thoughts on Nate Biddle?
Yeah, I'll start with what I do like about Nate Biddle. If you put it simply, you know, he's a legit 7-footer with a 7'5" wingspan. He is not reluctant. He's not reluctant to let the deep ball fly. He can shoot. He's confident beyond the arc. He also can pass and he can finish around the rim. Last year in Synergy, he ranked in the excellent category, on post-ups. But when you look at, you know, does he have legitimacy, you know, beyond the arc? He didn't have a single season where he shot above 34%, right? Yes, he improved year after year after year. But his athleticism, I think, definitely has held him back. And he's also been overshadowed by some of the players that have gone through Oregon in the past years. You had Khloe Ware, you had Dante, right? You had Kwame Evans, 2 years ago, when Biddle had that injury and he only played about 5 games. So he's always been overlooked in that sense. That's why he's kind of gaining some steam as like a legit NBA big man right now. And with him too, he just struggles a lot with pace. And what I mean by that is that he's not like your modern NBA big man that, you know, is going to push the tempo, you know, run the floor really well and set up others. He's going to set up others in different ways. So he's going to set up, you know, his teammates kind of, you know, at the nail, you know, at the free throw line in the short roll. He's great in the short roll. But he's not really going to get out and transition and, you know, play fast in an environment. So like, if you're looking at like the Pacers or like other teams that play really well with pace, that's not your type of, you know, scheme that you want Biddle in. He's not going to thrive there. He definitely needs to go to a team or a system that allows him to play his style of basketball. And I think with Biddle, even though he's not very athletic, like at all in my sense, I don't think he, like, that's not his strong suit, but he knows that. I think he's a very, very smart player. And that benefits him and, you know, in some ways better than athleticism will, because he knows he's not going to beat, you know, these, you know, high flying big man that are always, you know, that can play above the rim. He can't play above the rim, right? He's great. He's good at finishing around the rim. 60%, you know, small sample size this year, 60% last year. And he also has limited dunks too. He had 30 dunks, right? So you're not going to look at him to, you know, as a lob threat big or anything. You're basically just going to, you know, want him to play in the short role so he can set up the shooters, you know, alleviate some, you know, crowdage underneath the dunker spot, which he can do. And also, as you mentioned, in those delay actions that he can let it fly and are going to be confident, you know, that he's going to put some of them in. And I think it's also, you know, a confidence boost to us as we're watching him, and to him too, that he's improving every year. It's on the older side. He's going to be 23, I believe, before draft night. So that's something to note too. But with the NBA and how the NBA is going, they value skill set more than ever. So the more that a big man can do and how much more they can process, because in this trend too, big man and centers and, you know, four or fives have a lot more, you know, relying on their shoulders than they did in years past, like 5 to 10 years ago. They're the ones that kind of control the tempo and the pace and have a lot of more decisions that they have to make, whether compared to like, you know, wings or forwards, right? A lot of relies on the point guards in the centers now, which 5, 10 years ago, that would never be a thing. Yeah. So, and with Biddle, I think like if you're looking at him in that kind of scheme, and he's also great in drop coverage too, which, you know, which is what you want a big man to do in the NBA level. And he's already doing that at the college level too. It's just, he is good at all those things. It's just, I don't know how he's going to be able to keep up with NBA big men at that level.
So a bunch of great points there. I do want to start with the athleticism thing to clarify what I was saying earlier. I'm well aware that he's not a good athlete. I'm not claiming that he's a good athlete. What I was attempting to say is the verticality doesn't concern me that much because of how big he is. The lateral stuff doesn't concern me that much because as limited as he is athletically, he does slide his feet well, and that can make up for a lot of being slow-footed athletically if you're turned the right way to, you know, funnel defenders in the right direction, if you're willing to get in a stance and can move well in a stance. And really, the horizontal stuff is just getting up and down the court is where you see his athletic limitations the most. Now, in terms of what I'm encouraged with for Biddle, and I do want to start with this because I think it's a great contrast to when we were talking about Jaxel Lendeborg. Lendeborg is someone who we both like because it's hard to imagine a context where he doesn't fit. Biddle is a lot more context dependent. There are a few very specific things that make me more confident in his projection into those specific contexts. But all of this, this entire discussion is predicated on the fact that if he ends up in a situation that doesn't work for him, he's not going to play. If, you know, very much, if at all. But if he ends up in the right situation, I think there are quite a few teams that could use him if they basically make him exclusively a drop defender. And offensively, they basically say either you're stationed right around the basket or you're picking and popping. And the reason that I believe in him a lot more than other big man shooters is twofold. The first we've already talked about, which is the volume and the confidence. Like, yeah, you know, 3 3-pointers a game is not exactly Steph Curry levels, but for a player of, you know, his archetype and his skill set, I mean, given that we've talked about how reluctant Magoon Gwath and Alex Condon have been to let it fly from three, and Gwath in particular, given that I did, in fact, watch some of that Oregon-San Diego State game, you know, it is nice to see Biddle's confidence from three-point range, but more than that, it's the shot as a whole. He's got a very quick, high release, and he can get it off basically wherever he catches the ball. And that, to me, is huge for a big man because, you know, again, he's not going to be taking threes on the move, right? But if you're hitting him in transition, if he sets a screen and pops out and is left wide open from beyond the three-point line, the fact that he can catch and adjust as quickly as he can and the fact that his release is as quick and as high as it is makes him a lot more versatile as a shooter than even just the basic numbers of, hey, this guy's willing to take them would indicate. Now, again, the fact that for his college career, he's sitting at 34% from three-point range, sure, it would be nice if that was 36 or 37, right? But the volume is good enough. The short roll stuff, as you mentioned, is good enough that he's not just Ryan Anderson of, hey, I'm going to grab rebounds on one end, block shots defensively, maybe sometimes, and offensively, I'm going to shoot a lot from three and not do anything else. Like, he has a little bit of funk to his game. Now, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't look good with his offensive game, and oddly enough, that also encourages me because the things that he doesn't do well offensively are the things that no NBA team will allow him to do. Like, there were a few of his offensive possessions where he dribbled into an 18-footer and just missed hideously. I don't particularly care about that because even in the best possible version of Nate Biddle, I can guarantee you that no team is going to be saying, hey, Nate, create for us from 18 feet, right? That's just not going to happen. And so the fact that his worst offensive looks this year were essentially either post-ups to nowhere or mid-range pull-ups that he wildly clanged off the rim and or the backboard, that's fine. Because, again, those are not the shots he's going to be taking at the NBA level. And this is something that we've talked about before, and a lot of people at No Ceilings have mentioned, and Stephen Glaspie in particular has harped on the fact of, hey, a lot of times it's really helpful for a role player to be someone who was quote unquote the guy for a year at a lower level. And, you know, more importantly, at the college level, because virtually every NBA player was the star of their high school team, unless they played at like Montverde or something, right? So, you know, with Biddle, again, it's like the offensive holes in his game, they don't really bother me all that much because the vast majority of them are going to be things that he's literally never going to be asked to do at the NBA level. Now, for the fact that he's cut his fouls in half, again, small sample size so far this year, but he's also got a negative assist to turnover ratio after having a positive one last season and actually having a positive one the year before as well. And so I think that's something that once we get more than six games in the sample size will adjust itself. I believe in him as a passer. He's not, you know, spectacular wizardry of a passer, but he's more than competent enough as a big man passer. He's certainly well ahead of where Magoon Gwath is in terms of passing. And that's not something that can be considered a strength for Gwath like it can be for Biddle. There is one other thing, which just as of what I'm seeing right now on Sports Reference, Biddle is listed at 7'2", 215 pounds. If he weighs in at 215 pounds at the combine this year, I will find a hat and eat it. He's bigger than that. And, you know, Magoon Gwath, skinny as he is, you know, this year is listed at 207, I believe, on the San Diego State website. There is no way that there is only a difference in 8 pounds of weight between Nate Biddle and Magoon Gwath. Is he someone who is, you know, going to get under Joel Embiid's jersey right away at the NBA level? No. But he, if all you've seen of Nate Biddle is the Sports Reference page, you know, not to harp on this, but as someone who has watched every single one of his possessions this season, I promise you he's bigger than 7'2", 215. He's probably more like, I'd say, 7'1", 240, if I had to ballpark it. Either way, much more NBA ready in terms of frame than the numbers that I'm seeing on Sports Reference would indicate.
Yeah, if you go to Oregon's page, he's about, you know, 7'2", 250. So
okay, yeah, that seems a lot more accurate.
But yeah, if you look at Sports Reference, you're like, I don't know, like, and Miles Bird is only 175 on Sports Reference, but that's a little bit more realistic.
That I'm much more willing to buy than Nate Biddle being 215. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And with Biddle too, you made a lot of, you know, great points. With him, you're not looking at him to be this, you know, center big man that you know, rely on offensively, right? You just need him when he gets into the game to produce and to produce well. And he's also a very reliable prospect that is very, very low mistake in terms of, you know, how he handles the ball. Obviously, he's not really, you know, you don't really want him to put the ball on the deck, right? But in terms of, you know, his passing vision and process and ability, he had 3+ years at Oregon with an above 10% assist rate and 4 years where he had 11 to 15 turnover percentage too, which is really great for a 7-footer. So he's very, very low mistake. And I think you want players like him that, you know, have a very high basketball IQ that you can stick in. You know, with him, I think he would be, you know, a second round grade for me right now, or, you know, a 2-way type of player, but you're definitely getting a lot of value in that with him.
Yeah.
One prospect too that I think we've kind of forget who brought it up in the No Ceiling Slack, but Jackson Kohler. Mm-hmm. If you look at him and Nate Biddle, there's obviously some differences. Obviously Kohler's, you know, about 6'9", not 7 foot, but their trajectory is kind of similar in the sense of, you know, their 3-point capability and their growth there over the years. Kohler, not to like sidetrack, but just for comparison for the viewers, but averaging 14.6 points, 9.7 rebounds, 1.6 assists per game on 54, 46, 84 shooting splits. And this year he's having, you know, 3.7 3-point attempts, at a 46% clip compared to last year where he only shot 37% on 1.4 attempts. And then the two previous years, he didn't even shoot. He didn't even take 1 3-point attempt. So if you compare the prospects, I think Kohler's definitely a little bit better laterally and horizontally mover than Biddle is. But in terms of like IQ and like a plug and play center, I would lean a little bit more Biddle, but if you're looking at Kohler in terms of a fast-paced offense, I would go Kohler, but they're very, I kind of put them in the same category, right, in terms of like what their role would be at the NBA level.
Yeah, I mean, longer term no ceilings people may have heard me talk before about how I'm very fastidious about the top 60 on my board, and after 60, it's an absolute mess. But the reason why I have Biddle as a mid to late second round guy and Kohler as someone who, again, it's absolute chaos for me after like 65, but he's somewhere in the like 80, 90-ish range. And as simplistic as it is, it's honestly just because he's 6'9". Because the fact that Biddle is legitimately 7 feet tall, you know, he's not as athletic as Kohler. He's not as good on the glass as Kohler. They have very similar games outside of that. But Biddle, with being legitimately 7 feet tall and having that high, quick release, it's just a lot easier for me to buy the shooting part of his game translating than it is for Kohler. So, yeah. You know, again, it's like it's a difference of opinion. They've got very similar games, and it seems really simplistic and unfair to boil it down to, hey, Biddle's just 4 inches taller, but
that's, I mean, how it goes.
Yeah, it is basketball we're talking about. That,
yeah,
that does make a pretty significant difference. There is one other thing I want to say on Biddle before we move to your player, which is shout out to the other podcast that I do, the Kings Weekly podcast, and shout out to my other podcast co-host, Ray LeBove, over on the Kings Weekly podcast. But we recorded an episode a little bit before you and I hopped on here to record this one. And one of the players we talk about is someone who I think has a lot in common with Nathan Biddle, and that's Jay Huff, who, you know, he's bounced around the league quite a bit in his first 5 years, but everywhere he's gone, he's found a way to play 12 to 15 minutes a game and be really, really valuable in those minutes. And maybe not someone you want to play more than that, but every time he bounces to a new team, my immediate reaction is, wait, but he was so good in LA. Why didn't they keep him? Wait, but he was so good in Memphis. Why didn't they keep him? And I'm sure at the end of this year, it'll be, wait, but he was so good in Indiana. Why didn't they keep him? So, you know, there may very well be a, hey, he was pretty good, why didn't we keep him kind of career ahead for Nathan Biddle.
Yeah, no, that definitely is kind of like the thought process I have with Biddle. Like, it could, you know, work out in that sense of his role, but it could also, you know, not work out. And that's, you know, totally okay. It's, you know, when you get to, you know, the second round, two-way type of players, it kind of gets a little scattered, right? Especially this early in the season. We're only about a month in. But definitely, I think, you know, if he continues, also the San Diego State Oregon game, the first half was absolutely awful.
Yeah.
I thought I couldn't believe what I was watching, like during feast week, like the amount of turnovers.
I mentioned before, my project to watch this whole game ended pretty quickly. And definitely the fact that it was an awful game was a part of that experiment ending faster than I might have otherwise had it go.
Yeah, and I was like watching. I was like, what is going on? Like,
yeah,
geez.
Just basketball. Shall we transition to a player who also played in that game, who is our second prospect for the day?
Yeah, let's do it.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, so we disagreed a little bit about Nathan Biddle. We have very similar opinions about the player who you picked for today. So, especially given that I went on the rant that I did about Biddle to kick off that, I'm just going to throw the ball into your court here for Miles Bird. Why did you pick Miles for this week?
Yeah, I picked Miles Bird. I've been wanting to talk about him for a while. I think ever, like, when you brought up Magoon Gwath.
Stockton's own, Miles Bird. From right down the road from me. Anyway, sorry, continue.
Interesting. That kind of, I was like, oh man, I want to talk about Miles Bird. I think I was going to pick him that week that you picked Gwath, but I had to save it. We can't talk about two players on the same team. Come on.
Yeah.
That's not what we do on deep dives. Anyway, Miles Byrd, he's a redshirt junior, 6'7", about 175 pounds, definitely on the skinnier side. He's your typical modern NBA 3 and D wing. He's a glue type of player, definitely has some special defensive instincts that definitely drew me to him. He has great hands, definitely has a great process and ability in terms of, you know, getting into lanes, very slithery. With him, you know, the shot hasn't come around in the sense of, you know, on paper, like statistics wise, when you look at his stats, but if you look at the film, he's very, very confident and not reluctant to, you know, let it fly. It makes me more, you know, not as weary because he is confident, you know, off the dribble, off movement. And I do like his handle as well. This year, one of the notable games, besides Oregon, was at Michigan. Michigan in the Players Era Festival struggled, box score wise, but he started the game off pretty well. Hit this movement three off the high pick and roll, had, a jumper off a curl that he hit. The at the rim stuff, not really a fan of it just because he just looks so rushed down there, especially when Yaxel was switched onto him. He definitely felt very sped up and had difficulty with the size and length of Yaxel. So that's something to monitor. Even though, you know, Byrd is 6'7", he is on the skinnier side. And when he, you know, gets switched on, you know, these bigger wings like Yaxel, you know, he's 6'9", 240, he definitely struggles. And there's this play off the top of my head. As San Diego State was in transition, pushing the ball. Byrd is fantastic in transition. Got off the floor super well. Had a wide open shot right underneath the rim, kind of stopped instead of just going right up. And because Yaxel was flying in to block him, kind of did like a little pump fake, but waited too long after the pump fake and then was at a really, really bad angle, like directly, you know, in back of the rim and kind of just boofed it, really. And that's not really great to see. I think, you know, at the rim stuff, he struggles a lot just because he gets so sped up. And he's not comfortable around there. He, at the rim last year, he shot, I believe, you know, 60%, but a lot of those, at 55%, this year he's shooting a little bit better at 64%, but only on 14 attempts. But with him, when you look at him defensively, I have a lot less questions than offensively. Last year, he definitely gained some steam at about the same time last year, just because if you look at his defensive stats, they're pretty amazing, honestly. I mean, he has a 5.7 defensive box per minus for, you know, a wing that's, you know, pretty good if you're looking at that. And also too, last 2 years, you know, he had a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, has improved year after year, from beyond the arc. Last year was really his, first year, you know, playing, you know, above 30 games and starting all games. That was his first year as a starter. His second year, he only started about 4 games. But when you look at, you know, Miles Byrd as a prospect, you're going to look at, you know, he can defend and he is a very confident shooter and he can handle, you know, playing in the pick and roll, which is, you know, the bread and butter of the NBA too. He can play in a 5-out offense. And the only questions I really have for him is, you know, is the shot legit and can the numbers back up what, you know, you see in his confidence when he, you know, is shooting them. And I don't really know, honestly, at this point in time. But with backing that up, you know, his playmaking ability definitely, you know, kind of overrules some of those questions for me, because with him, even when the shot isn't falling, he still can impact the game. I don't want to get these games messed up. Against Idaho State, you know, he had 6 assists, 6 steals, but only had 4 points, right? He's a typical, you know, plug and play player that, you know, he has this plus size, he has the plus wingspan, he's athletic, I think he has a really great motor. He's great in transition. It's just a matter of, you know, can he be more consistent? And last year, you know, he kind of like drifted off a little bit. And can he hold up against, you know, top 100 competition too?
Yeah. So with the shooting stuff, really a lot of it for me just continues to come back to last year where he started really hot and there were people, myself included, who had him as a first round pick because like, man, he's such a special defensive talent. And you hit the nail on the head with the playmaking stuff. Although there is something I do want to talk about, which is I'm very curious with your thoughts on his handle, because that is, I think, the one place where we do disagree on Miles Bird. I'm less sure of his handle than you are, but in terms of the stuff that we do agree on, it just, you know, so much of this comes down to the shot, because if he can shoot, then he's a 3-and-D player who can make the right pass when the ball swings his way and contribute most of his value on the defensive end. And the fact that he struggles to finish around the basket is much less important if the majority of his shots are going to be three-pointers. And, you know, it can be as simple as by the time we got to the end of last year, he was just a hair above 31% from three-point range and just a hair above 38% from the floor. And that's just not going to cut it. Yeah. And where we're at this year is, again, small sample size of 6 games. And I can't say I watched every possession of Miles Bird's like I did of Nate Biddle's, but I did watch quite a few of them. And the confidence is the same as it was last year. I mean, you know, on a rate basis, he's taking slightly fewer threes so far this year, technically, but it's 5.9 to 5.0. Either way, it's a healthy volume of three-point attempts. And this year so far, his splits are 43, 37, 78. If those are his splits by the end of the year, I might bump him back into first round territory if he continues to play really, really good defense. I'm curious for your thoughts about the handle, as I mentioned earlier. I'm also curious for your thoughts on the defense, because small sample size and last year he was great all year long. This year, to me, he's been more good than great. And he's making up for what I think has been a slight, again, I'm saying slight, but slight fall off in the defense by being more efficient on the offensive end. But it's one of those things where we talk about it, you know, quite frequently of, hey, players who are exerting a lot of energy on the offensive end tend to have less on the defensive end and vice versa. Is he sacrificing defense for offense? If everything continues the way it's been playing out, then by the end of the year, his counting stats will be slightly lower. Like last year, he was 12.5 points, just under 3 assists and 2 steals and a block. This year, he's at 11 points, pretty much identical assist numbers, but 1.5 steals and 0.5 blocks. And look, a lot of this is small sample size of, hey, you know, when it was only 3 games, it was a lot worse. When it's 6 games, there's a little bit more solidity, but it's still way too small a sample size. And we haven't seen, you know, conference play or anything. So yeah, that's another huge factor that we haven't quite reached yet. But in terms of the Bird evaluation, I mean, I think there are a lot more contexts where he works than Biddle, but that's just because, hey, if you're a 6'7", 3-and-D guy who's hitting 37% from three on high volume and can be a solidly above average defender, that's an NBA player. If he can get to the point where he's better defensively, like I think he was last year, while maintaining the improved efficiency offensively, then he's a clear first-round guy. If the shooting falls off like it did last year, and the defense also continues to be not quite as impressive as it was last year, then I'm going to start to get concerned. And to be entirely honest, I've already dropped Bird a decent amount on my board from where he was to start the year. And the defense is the reason why. Just again, he's been good. I'm not complaining. Like his defense has been solidly above average, but last year he was great. And this year he has not been great. The other thing that I do want to ask your thoughts on are the handle, because again, this is where we disagree. And I think part of it is something that you did mention, which is the hesitation. It feels like a lot of the time when he's running pick and roll, he knows what he's supposed to do. He knows where he's supposed to be. He knows where the reads are. He knows how to make them. A lot of the plays that I saw that concerned me with Bird were the ball would swing his way. It wouldn't be a design play. It wouldn't be a pick and roll. He would hesitate. He would freeze. He would do a stutter step dribble that did not create any sort of room, and then he'd pass out of it. And to me, you know, again, it's not like he has a bad handle, but to me, it's like those moments concern me because those are moments where NBA defenses will pick on you if you do that. And more than that, again, because of the type of player that Bird is, even though he's solid at running pick and roll, I don't think that's going to be his bread and butter. And so if that's not his bread and butter, it's much more important to me with evaluating Bird of, hey, when the ball swings your way, can you make a good decision and can you make it quickly? And some of his hesitation and some of his sloppy moments with his handle have come at the most inopportune times. And look, because I haven't watched every moment of Bird like I have of Biddle, maybe I just happen to, you know, watch a bad set of his plays. And certainly last year, this was not something that I was worried about, but his handle has never been a major concern for me. I'm just more curious because that seems to be, you know, we agree on a lot of Bird's profile, I think, but that seems to be our biggest disagreement of you see that as a plus and I see that as neutral and maybe even a minus.
Yeah, I think what I mean that I like his handle is that, you know, he's on average, he's below average, average, you know, pick and roll ball handler and, you know, off the dribble, right? But if he, you know, comes in, you know, to the half court, you know, looking to pass and, you know, relying on his playmaking ability, that's where I feel like he's more steady with his handle when, you know, he's not, a play's not designed for him or, you know, it's kind of like a quick, you know, give and go or dish. I do actually like his handle when he takes about, you know, one to three max pound dribbles, you know, into the paint, kind of disrupts, you know, the paint and the key and kind of, you know, does like a little dish to the big man or, you know, kick out to his shooters. That's where I like his handle because I think he does a great job of disrupting defenses that way with his handle and his size and length. Because with him too, you know, people are going to drive him off the lane, off the 3-point line, right? And yeah. I think having that, you know, ability to do that where he's consistent enough to, you know, put the ball on the deck, you know, a couple dribbles here and there. And then he has, you know, great playmaking ability to, you know, do that. I think I'm more confident in that than, you know, him actually, you know, handling, being the primary ball handler in a pick and roll type of situation. And with him too, I think, you know, he is a good, you know, free throw shooter. He's improved every year. And also he's been better at getting to the line. Not this year, he's kind of, you know, small sample size with 6 games, only 1.5 attempts on average this year. A little less than 3.5 attempts last year, but at an 83% clip this year, 77.8%. But that's still, you know, a low point to his game is, you know, finishing around the rim and, you know, drawing contact. He still struggles with contact just because, you know, he does need to add strength and he can't just rely on his athleticism alone and his shiftiness. So that's definitely a, you know, a point too of his, you know, where I can see you're kind of a little bit more hesitant with his handle just because he's not really, you know, putting a lot of dribbles on the floor, right? That's not really his type of game. But on the, and like with that too, I hope, you know, he improves in that area because he's not going to be, if he is going to be a true 3-and-D in the league, you know, he has to be great at, you know, beyond the arc, and he's not there yet. But he does have, you know, I like his mid-range game. I think he's also confident. He's also a lefty shooter. I don't know if we've mentioned that. So I think a little bit more, you know, eyes get drawn to that just because he is a lefty. But with him too, he's still, where did it go? I had it down. Yeah, he averaged, you know, 2.1 steals last year. You know, he's okay on the glass, on the defensive end of the ball, 3.5 defensive rebounds per game, 1.1 blocks per game, 1.6 turnovers with a 4.2% steal rate. So, when you look at that, you know, you would think he is able to, you know, change that over to the offensive side too, in terms of, you know, disrupting passing lanes even more with his handle, but he's really not at that, you know, point yet. But I think it's more like you said, he's kind of trading you know, his defense a little bit for his offense, because I think he has more to prove on that sense. And I think the start of the Michigan game, he was definitely looking confident out there. I mean, he was letting them fly, and it's something I didn't really see as much as quickly as last year, which I think is a plus in his column for sure. But, you know, if those start dropping and, you know, the volume gets up a little bit, definitely needs to get more, you know, free throw attempts. I'm pretty worried about that, honestly, just with his size and his, you know, manipulation that he has in terms on the offensive side of the ball. But yeah, I definitely have moved him down not quite a bit, but I think he's probably like, I don't have my board on me, but I think like 50 right now. Because a lot more prospects have impressed early on, but that's not to say he can't, you know, be a first round prospect for me, you know, by draft time. But I think he just has a lot more on his plate too, kind of like what we said with Gwath, right?
For sure.
And I think there's just more for him to prove this year, and it's just more of like a balancing act for him.
Yeah, I don't have my board in front of me either, but I'm pretty sure I have him like late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah.
Again, you know, we've said small sample size before. We'll say it again. I'm a bit concerned about the turnover jump, but definitely the biggest concern is the fact that he's taking less than half as many free throws as he was last year. And that's something where a very easy way to make up for not being the best around the basket is just getting fouled a lot and getting to the line and knocking down free throws. You know, it sounds simple, but it's simple because it works. And, you know, if he could do that at a higher rate, then that would be really helpful. In terms of the offensive stuff, you mentioned the transition, and, you know, so far this year, he's been both high frequency and high efficiency. Last year, slightly lower efficiency, but still very high frequency in terms of transition. All of that is very good. That also is where I'm kind of concerned about the handle, because that's the kind of thing where if you can take advantage of a broken defense, if you can take advantage of a 2-on-1, then that really helps your offensive value in transition. And him hesitating and not having the cleanest pickups when it's not like a design play, when he knows, okay, you know, I'm starting at the top of the key, dribbling to the right, getting the screen here, you know, curling around the guy, where if he gives me too much space, pulling up for the midi, like all of those design play things are very helpful that he can run them at a high level. I don't mean to denigrate that by any sense of the imagination, but he's at his best when, you know, he can be an athlete in the open floor, or when he can spot up for threes, assuming his percentage holds, right? Because a whole lot of his evaluation is predicated on the percentage holding. But assuming the percentage holds and, you know, he ends up like 45, 37, 78 splits by the end of the year with the same 3-point volume, my biggest concern at that point with his offense will be at the rim stuff, number one, but the handle, number two, and specifically the handle in transition, because again, it feels like this year, and maybe again, you know, maybe this is small sample size, but it feels like this year in comparison to even last year, that he's hesitating more in those situations, and it's exposing his handle a little bit more in ways that, you know, maybe I would have a more positive view of his handle if he wasn't hesitating on easier opportunities in transition that would have made a whole lot of other things look prettier.
Yeah, I think, those are definitely great points. I think in transition, you're not, you know, going to look to him to, you know, take it coast to coast, because he can't handle it at this, you know, point in time. But he can definitely, you know, set up, you know, shooters in the corner, or, you know, throw up a lob to his big man. It's worth noting too, you know, when he's pretty fast, I think, you know, his size and length, but you would expect him, you know, in transition and, you know, having the ability to, you know, take it to the cup, right? He only has one dunk.
Wow.
Which, you know,
that's lower than you might have expected. Like, certainly lower than I would have expected.
Yeah, he only has one dunk, which you would definitely think is more, right? Because he is like athletic. He doesn't have a great first step, I would say, but he's bursty in the sense of, you know, he can't really create his own shot, right? You're not going to look at him to do that, but he's more bursty in the sense of, you know, his processing ability. and setting up others too. But, you know, he's, you know, a two or three, right? Definitely more of a three, but, yeah, there's just like a lot of scenarios where he can definitely work out, but there's also a lot of questions, that are in terms of his archetype are a pretty big deal, right? You know, if he's not getting, if his shot's not falling, you know, he's not getting to the rim. He's definitely not getting there enough. He can't really, you know, withstand contact. He's not an above the rim type of athlete. There's a lot of questions. So I think after our conversation too, I'm kind of like, maybe I have to, you know, watch a little bit more. I have a little bit more questions, but, yeah, but I think for right now, you know, he's a good second round prospect. And I think, you know, as the season goes on in conference play, I think we'll see a little bit more out of Bird.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm expecting more. And, you know, again, for all we've said about small sample size, it's concerning that he has one dunk this year. He had 18 last year. So, like, I think, you know, again, he's no Aaron Gordon, right? But he's, I think, a better above the rim athlete than he's shown this season. And it's hard for me to tell how much of that is just change in role and he's, you know, not getting as many opportunities. Maybe, you know, there's some sort of injury that he's playing through. I hate speculating about that sort of thing, but
he did have a wrist guard on
the
Oregon, so he might be dealing with something.
Maybe. And I mean, certainly that would explain the fact that someone who, you know, again, for not being the most rim rattling guy, 18 dunks in 34 games versus one in six. I mean, that's quick math. Right. It's like clearly he is not dunking as much this year as he was last year, but also maybe next game he puts down four dunks and, you know, then it looks ridiculous in the other direction. Right. That's part of the fun of the magic of the math of the early portion of the season. But with Bird, I mean, I'm not as worried about the athleticism. I think he's more than good enough athlete for the kind of player that he's going to be. Really, for me, I think a lot of it is just there are a few moving parts with his game, but ultimately the rest of them will not matter if he shoots 30% from three again, right? Like if it turns out, hey, he got hot to start last season, he got hot to start this season. The reality of him is a 40-30-80 guy, not a 45-35-80 guy. 45-35-80 Miles Bird has some length of NBA career as a role player. 40-30-80 Miles Bird maybe gets a cup of coffee, but probably doesn't stick around an NBA roster. So, you know, as much as I hate doing the cliche of if only he could shoot it, if only he could shoot it, with Bird, it's like he's willing to shoot it. And that's a significant part of the battle, right? It's not half the battle, but it's a significant part of the battle to just be knowing that that is your archetype, to be willing to take those shots. Having said that, if you're a willing shooter, even if you are a willing shooter, if you're only shooting 30%, it's really not helpful. If you're shooting 37%, then not only is it helpful, but, you know, as mentioned earlier, you can go from great defensively to good defensively and still be a solid NBA player if you can shoot that kind of percentage from three consistently.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. He definitely, you know, if he continues, you know, his kind of flips his, you know, field goal percentage with his 3-point percentage, right? Then we're kind of, it's a different scenario for him and, you know, his longevity in the league, but, you know, that's, you know, not what reality is right now. And we're trying to be realistic, but we're also trying to project him too. And I think we both make, you know, pretty good points of, you know, what he is right now and what he can be for sure.
You're right, Paige. You did make a bunch of good points. No, I mean, you know, in all seriousness, though, something that I've written about before in the past and something that is genuinely important to me as a scout is the thing that I always put first is hope. I hope that every guy who has a hole in his game can fill that hole. I hope every player who has something that's a weakness can turn it into something neutral. I hope that, you know, anybody who has something neutral in their game can turn it into a strength. But the flip side of this is, you know, to attempt to do this job properly, I can't just say the most optimistic possible take about every single player, right? And so, you know, unless I have legitimate reason to believe that the player in question is a bad human being, I will always be cheering for the player to get better and to improve the areas that are most important to the game. And, you know, just to have as much fun playing basketball as possible, right? I want good things for not bad people, generally speaking, but also to attempt to do this job adequately, you also have to be realistic. And much though I would like to hope for the best, history tells us that the struggling shooters of the world are much more common than the Kawhi Leonards of the world, right? Like, as much as everybody would like to go from 29% in college from 3-point range, like Kawhi and Anthony Edwards, to 40% on high volume from 3-point range, basically right away in the NBA, even when you have Chip Englund or any of the other fantastic shooting coaches around the NBA, that just doesn't always happen. That's life, right? And so if we're being realistic about the Miles Bird evaluation, we can say, man, here are the three parts of his game that I hope that he continues to show improvement on or continues to improve on as the year goes on. But if I'm looking at it realistically, the profile of Miles Bird, NBA player, doesn't really make sense if he's shooting less than 33% from 3-point range.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And like you too, you know, we hope the best for everyone, right? But also we have to be realistic in terms of, you know, you mentioned life, obviously, but in terms of basketball too, because not everyone's going to have, you know, the path that they want or what we want them to have or, you know, whatever. But it's just important to, you know, wish the best for, you know, every prospect, because, you know, this isn't, you know, our lives. We're not going through the draft process. We're just, you know, a little bit into, you know, we like basketball and we like evaluating and we like, you know, watching it and talking about it, but they're the ones at the end of the day that, you know, get to play. So, I think that's a good, you know, lean into the games tonight. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, let's move on to our quick hit section and wrap this thing up.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right, so quick hits. I had something self-indulgent, and you had something that our listeners might actually want to hear. So why don't you go first?
Okay, let's do it. Yeah, so great college basketball slate tonight. A lot of marquee matchups going on. Obviously, we're recording at 7 p.m. Eastern time, so a lot of these games are, you know, towards the end. Some of them are getting started. So just to go through them really quick, Michigan State, Iowa. State's up 52-37. I know.
I'm stunned that you mentioned Michigan State first. Never would have guessed. Hey, Paige, where'd you go to college?
Definitely not MSU.
Uh-huh.
And I know we have probably a lot of, you know, Bennett Sturts fans in the audience. 28 minutes, 9 points, 3 of 8 from the field, 2 of 6 from 3-point range, 3 assists, 4 turnovers, 1 steal. And 2 fouls, and 1 of 4 from the line. Cohen Carr, 15 points, 5 of 7 from the field, 0 of 1 from 3-point range, 5 of 5 from the free throw line. That's nice to see. 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 turnover. That's that game. I think Rucker had a good tweet. I wish we could pull it up on here, but, basically just, you know, kind of big time game for Sturts. Not really, you know, living up to what we kind of had envisioned. Maybe obviously we're going to watch the game, you know, this week, but, just based on box score, you know, it could be going a little better for him, but obviously they're playing one of the best teams in the country. So, and then Florida Duke, one of the top matchups of the night. At halftime right now, Duke's up by 12. Cam Boozer has 16. Cam Boozer has 16, 3, and 1. And then Condon, your guy, 2 points, 7 2 turnovers.
Yeah, that is aging like maybe one of my fastest aging like milk takes that I've ever given in the draft space, which... You know, anybody who's done draft stuff for more than a couple of years, you get things drastically wrong. That one's looking rough. That one's, yeah, there's not really anything else I can say.
That's the name of the game, though, Nick. And, you know,
great, Bob.
And, you know, you can, you're not afraid, you know, to admit that, you know, it wasn't, you know, the best take, but it also wasn't the worst take, you know. But it's good.
It's pretty close to the worst take. But
then, Thomas Howe, 13 points, 6-9 from the field, 1 of 3 from 3-point range, 3 rebounds, you know, having quite a good first half so far. And then shout out to Jacob, one of our No Ceilings people. He's at the Tennessee Syracuse game right now.
Newest member of the editing team. Shout out to Jacob.
Yes, shout out to Jacob. He actually sent me a few social clips. So we'll hopefully have those up, you know, after we get off, you know, this episode. But yeah, good to see that he's getting some in-person, scouting. I'm jealous, but that's fine. Tennessee's down by 7, 50-43 Syracuse. Let's see what else. Purdue, Rutgers only up by 8 right now. And then obviously UConn, Kansas at 9 p.m. and yeah. North Carolina, Kentucky following at 9:30. So really good night slate in the middle of the week.
I'm just going to continue to be sad every time I hear Kansas in a matchup until Darren Peterson comes back. But, you know, other than that.
I know. He's only, for those that, you know, maybe not, don't know. Obviously, I think if you listen to, you know, our feed, you kind of have an idea, right? But he only played, you know, the first 3 games of the season. He's missed the last, you know, 6. So definitely was excited for him to play. We have to wait a little bit longer, but hopefully not, you know, so long.
Yeah, we're getting close. Yeah. Before we wrap up this episode, I had, as I mentioned, one very selfish, self-indulgent thing before we wrap, which is, very long story short, I have an article in the works, which, you know, I've written for all of our mock drafts so far this year, but this would be my first full-length article of the year. And it's actually going to be mostly covering players who we have talked about in various deep dive episodes. So both players we're talking about today, Nate Biddle and Miles Byrd, in addition to one of your guys from earlier in the year and two of my guys from earlier in the year. So in addition to Biddle and Miles Byrd, I'll be talking about Andrej Stojakovic. I'll be talking about Donovan Dent, and I'll be talking about Ortega Owe. And I won't spoil too much about the article, partially because I want to keep it under wraps, mostly because it is such an extreme work in progress that I'm very unsure about anything except for the 5 most prominently featured players. But suffice it to say that it is very intentional that I've picked 1 lead guard, 2 wings, 1 forward, and a center for the article that I'm preparing. So it's a very quirky group of players, but this is a fun thought exercise before we wrap things up. I'm curious, Paige, what would you think about that team? Donovan Dent, Ortega Owe, Andrej Stojakovic, Flory Badunga, Nate Biddle. A lot of different skills, a lot of people who can cover for each other. Not much 3-point shooting, but other than that,
I mean, hey, it's a good starting 5, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good defensive starting 5, that's for sure.
Yes. I think the front court, you know, you got Flory, athletic, versatile big man that, you know, can get up there. And you have, you know, Biddle that can, you know, hold it down in the short roll. And, you know, the key, kind of the best of both worlds, a little 2-man action with them. I would like it, honestly.
Because I'm a basketball weirdo, I am just imagining how fun and weird the Stojakovic OA weird inverted pick and roll stuff would be. Or even just, you know, have Byrd be, you know, Stojakovic Byrd pick and roll stuff. I think now that I'm doing the math, I actually mentioned 6 players. Hold on. Byrd, Biddle, OA, Stojakovic, Dent, Flurry. I guess I'd probably actually take Bird out and put Badunga in now that I'm actually formulating it. So, oops, I tried to make a starting five and I put six people in it. So if this were football, I'd have a flag on the play for too many men on the field, but, you know, whatever. I mean, just doing it actually correctly rather than the wrong way I put it the first time of Dent, Oe, Stojakovic, Badunga, Biddle. There we go. I mean, that's a really strong defensive unit. Like, all five of those guys are above average defenders. The Badunga Biddle defensive pairing, I think, would be really fun because, yeah, as you mentioned, Badunga is like the, you know, the strong safety, you know, switching across positions, and Biddle's just like station him directly under the basket and let him be tall. He's really good at being under the basket and being tall. And yeah, again, the shooting is lacking, so maybe the offense would be ugly, but I mean, basically all five of those guys can operate. I mean, not really Badunga, but four of the five guys can operate in some kind of pick and roll, whether it's short roll, pick and pop, you know, handling. So yeah, I mean, it's funny because given the current current construction of the article, it won't be as much about the five of them playing together as much as they're sort of representative of, you know, guards, wings, forwards, and centers. But now that this entirely thrown together, very self-indulgent exercise is over, I think that's an interesting starting five.
Yeah, it'd be, you know, if there was, you know, fantasy college basketball, it would be a great fantasy, you know, starting five.
If there was a fantasy college basketball, that would be my dad's starting five, because as we talked about before the episode started, my father's belief in the importance of basketball is 110% defense, negative 10% offense. So he would absolutely adore that lineup going all 2004 Pistons and beating teams like 50 to 45.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with your dad. I'm rocking with your dad on that one.
Shout out to you, Dad. I don't think there's a better place we could close this than that. So, as always, thank you so much for joining us. She is Paige Otto. You can find her all over social media at PaigeOtto_. And of course, you can find her work on NoCeilingsNBA.com. You can find me across social media. I'm mostly avoiding social media, but as the holidays approach, I'm probably going to be publicizing things more, especially given that I am, in fact, working on an article that I probably should, you know, tweet something out about at some point. So maybe you'll see me slightly more on social media in the days to come, but at NBA Johnson on Twitter and Blue Sky. If you've been enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to No Ceilings, wherever you get your podcasts and or your videos, and leave a rating and a review. Five stars, always very much appreciated on our end. And if you have any feedback regarding the deep dives portion of the show, feel free to reach out to either of us or me via email, nickaj.nba@gmail.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.